found this in Ganarum. Ganarmir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's
Sick Performance.
Duncan, O'Brien, Hertzberg, and Davis at Synthaholics.
O'Brien, legs wide open.
Faith?
We're legs wide open.
That's the follow-up to the Creed song with arms wide open.
I had to do it. I'm sorry.
We've already killed one of them.
Yes.
We lost another dozen listeners. Our show numbers keep going down.
Keep losing them.
We're losing structural integrity, Captain.
Or moral integrity.
Oh. One or the other.
So,
oh, no, we never had that at the beginning.
So today we have our Dave, myself, Faith Hertzberg, and we have
Guy Davis joining us.
Guy Davis returning to talk to us. He came back again. He's a sucker for abuse.
I would say that I'm definitely a sucker for abuse. It's a thing. But also, this is a lot of fun. And you guys were like saying, hey, we could talk about Darmok. And I was like, hey, I've got a fan theory about Darmok.
Oh, I love Darmok.
And he has a fan theory, too. That's awesome. So, we are talking about Next Generation Darmok.
Bonus round.
Yeah, so Darmok... Started September 30th, 1991. It has the captain of the Reliant, Paul Winfield.
Yes, he's back.
He's back.
One less slug in his ear.
Yes, he does. Now he's got the slug took over his head.
Now Triceracop is after him.
Yes. So he is playing the Timarian captain. Timarians are a very odd race that speak in allegory.
Metaphor.
And it's basically a very popular episode, and it's the whole idea of making communications with a race that nobody knows what the hell they're saying. So,
lots of proper nouns.
Rick Berman hated that episode. He hated it, and it took them 2 years, apparently. It was like started in 89.
After he saw it, he liked it, but he hated the idea of it.
He liked it better once they had put the allegory parts of it that were part of the human translation, or you know, when he starts talking about Gilgamesh. He liked it a lot better with Gilgamesh in it.
Cool.
But yeah, apparently it took them 2 years to finally bring that script in, because it started in 89. It was part of the 89 writer's season.
Michael Piller was like, I need this to become a thing. Nope.
Yep, Piller kept putting it in. Piller kept trying to do that, and then apparently it finally came through in fifth season. Took him a long time.
And it was the perfect time, too, because Picard got his awesome leather jacket.
I don't know what
suede jacket with leather top on it.
Right.
It's like the coolest one. He gets his gray jumper underneath it.
Yeah,
I've always wondered how many communicators do they have? Because you notice he takes the jumper off and he's got a communicator on his gray shirt, and then he puts the jumper back on and he's got a communicator.
That's a good point.
It fades through. It just like
it just beams through from level to level.
That's how they get their underwear and socks off.
It's called a smartphone. Communicator. I don't know.
So so basically this is how it starts off, that the Enterprise has had some established communications between the Federation and the Temarians.
They reference like three or four other attempts have been made, and everyone just walks away shrugging. It's like, what?
They have no idea what they're saying each other.
We didn't fire at each other, so I guess that's good.
Picard's hopeful that they can try to bridge this gap of communication, and once they come in contact with Temarians, unfortunately – they almost immediately realize, oh, shit, we don't know what the hell they're saying. I can't make heads or tails.
Shaka, when the walls fell.
Yeah, and they're like, well, okay, that's great, but do you want to talk about something else? And
do you want to sign a non-aggression pact?
Yeah,
no proper nouns in this word. Non-aggression pact.
It starts with the winter. Rye and Jiri at Lunga, Rye of Loani, Loani under two moons. I love that. It was great.
It is. It's very interesting, but in the beginning, it is very confusing when you first see this episode. You're like, what?
Pay in a win.
Well, so they oh my god.
A little bit of Nell in there.
Yes.
They should have brought Nell to help them talk to the Sumerians.
That would be funny.
Wow.
Tay and the Wham.
So they're on the bridge, and all of a sudden, Captain Picard and the Temerian captain are beamed off, and they're put on the surface of the planet they're orbiting. Unfortunately, the Temerians have put some kind of scattering field in the ionosphere. It's the first time I've heard of a scattering field. But that prevents the Enterprises for using their transporters and blocking communication.
That's
as well.
A powerful technology. We're going to blanket a planet.
I am going to talk about Temerian technology after we get through the rundown, because I have problems with this. Anyways, next thing is Picard and the Temerian captain are on the planet, and the Temerian is offering him a knife.
Timba, his arms wide.
And Picard naturally just feels that he wants to get in like a combat.
He's like, I read that log about Arena. I read that thing when Pam and Kirk fought the Gore, and I'm going to not do that.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
And then the Temerian captain gets mad, turns his back on the captain, and is like,
yeah,
just walks away into the field. It's like, oh, well, that's not very helpful.
He's obviously frustrated.
Yeah, whatever, dude.
Yeah. I'm offering you a knife. There's only just this crazy monster roaming around that's phasing in and out of reality. So, in the meantime, Enterprise is trying their best to try to get Picard off the planet. They're trying to beam them. They're trying to communicate with Temerians.
Try to send the shuttlecraft down.
They try to send Worf down with a shuttlecraft. Of course, Worf is always the guy who they send on the missions that
the
fail.
The go-to to fail.
Let's do the first couple things that will not work.
Well, it's like, let's fire at them. It's like, we don't want to do a war thing, you know. But then they end up firing at them anyway. So, I mean, the episode would have been a lot shorter if if Worf had his way.
Right. But meantime, Picard is doing his best at trying to understand the Temerian captain.
By freezing to death.
He's trying to start a fire. And I've learned one thing about Captain Picard. Mr. Perfecto Picardo.
Couldn't start a fire.
Can't start a damn fire to save his life. I mean,
nope.
This must be.
Didn't do so good in Boy Scouts, did he?
I'm thinking this is like basic Federation Academy stuff.
Hey, Picard was practicing knife through heart class.
Knife through heart surgery.
Knife through heart, you know, and then he got a merit badge in laughing at it.
Naush Kung Fu.
I mean, am I not wrong? I mean, that's like what, like, this is Captain Picard. He does everything right. And he can't do the fire. I thought that was very enlightening. So.
Well, it's also the 24th century. How often is he going to have to make a fire with his, not a phaser?
I was going to say, that was actually what I was thinking, too. I mean, we saw with Sulu all the way back.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he used phasers for.
I got my dog with its little unicorn horn, and I'm going to shoot a phaser at a rock and make it hot. Cook the dog.
Yeah, that works. So Picard can't start the fire, but the he's still trying to communicate with the Temerian captain, Temerian captain feels bad for him and gives him one of his logs.
Timba, his arms wide. Timba, as in the wood that's burning. Timber.
That's what you mean, right?
Yeah.
Arms wide? Fire. And so Captain Picard doesn't freeze to death on the planet for the night. So as we said, Worf then next tries to take the shuttlecraft down, and that doesn't work because the Temerians take a nice little shot at their nacelle and
disables it. It's like, we're not going to hurt you. We're just going to make sure you can't land it or take off.
Right. And next we see, what was that guy?
You'll have to recover the shuttle.
Yeah, you'll have to get on your spacesuit and kind of float your way back to the ship.
Yep.
Pull it with a rope. Get going, Worf.
The grappling hook, like an Enterprise, the grappler.
Yeah, exactly. The claw.
Let's step back 175 years.
So, they they take the shuttlecraft goes back, unsuccessful. They start making other plans. In the meantime, too, Data and Troy are looking at all their communications and trying to figure out any of the words because they have no reference of what they're talking about. The people when they talk about Tanagra or the place Tanagra
and Darmok
and Darmok and Jalad, they're like, "Who? I don't know who these people are."
So they get like 67 references for Darmok and like another 87 for Tanagra, and then they like, "Hey, maybe we should cross reference these."
Right,
and then that starts, and then they find out that he was a warrior who went to a place.
Right.
So, okay. Island.
Yeah, so they're getting an idea of how they communicate at that time, but of course they still don't know anything about what they're saying, you know, necessarily, because they don't have the full context of the stories. At the same time, Picard the next morning gets up. The Temerian captain's not there, and he's wandering around looking at his
his log,
which is probably.
It's probably pictographs of
the on fire earlier. This is the captain's logs.
Right. This is in paper and probably completely illegible to Picard as well.
It's like, I'm going to figure out what you mean. Maybe your writing will make more sense than your speech patterns. And it looks like a whole bunch of wavy lines.
Yeah.
That was another thing I thought was kind of interesting. You know, he's like, maybe reading through his logs. Well, does your universal translator go to your eyes?
Yeah, exactly.
Because, I mean, how do you read that? I mean, even if you could somehow decipher it, they're not going to write in English.
Right. Hieroglyphs.
Right, exactly.
Well, he is a big fan of archaeology, so maybe he's like, Egyptian hieroglyphs.
Yeah.
I guess
all he reads is Kailash when it rises. And oh, great.
Yeah.
it would have been great if he read, if he got to hear him read something from it.
That would be funny.
Yep.
Well, at the same time, right when he's looking through the log, the Temerian captain comes up in a panic, basically handing him the knife again. And Picard's like, I told you, I don't want to fight you. I don't want to do this. And then we do get the...
With fist open. With fist closed. You're talking about opening and waving.
So I don't know what he was talking about there. But anyways, there is a creature that comes into play. This is some kind of...
Triceracop.
This is where Triceracop comes in. Uzani, with his army with fists open.
Yeah. And he can cloak himself, and he kind of phases in and out and kind of sneaks around.
I wonder if he phases in and out, kind of like you do. I do. Yeah, because last episode...
I do phase in and out.
You said you did phase in and out sometimes.
And so...
He's a phaser.
I am a phaser. I'm the living phaser.
Are you set to kill?
At least you're honest about it.
Sometimes. Sometimes I'm set to sleep.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Darn it. My phaser is set for sleep. Come on, wake up. Microsoft.
We'll resume in 16 minutes.
Damn it.
God,
I'm going to die.
I'm going to use my phaser on him, sir. But
then it'll function.
So, the operating system on my phaser crashed. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. So they get in a knife fight with this Triceratops invisible thing, and Picard gets a hit and gets
smacked back.
At the same time, the Temerian captain is trying to attack him, and he's taking a brunt of some abuse from the creature.
And meanwhile, Ashley Judge taking harsh words from LaForge.
Yes,
trying to get that. This is actually her debut in this episode. This is like her acting debut is in this episode.
That's right,
Sin Leffler,
the Ashley Judd.
Who we mentioned last time Guy was on the show. Yeah. What a coinkydink.
Yep. I think it's not a coincidence. I think someone picked this one because they watched some Ashley Judd. I want to watch some Ashley Judd.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
He brought it back just for you.
Exactly.
Thank you. Ashley Judd doing a fan dance. Now that would be stellar.
With Nichelle Nichols?
I don't care. Anyway, it works.
I love Nichelle so much, but that was an uncomfortable scene.
That's my favorite scene of the whole movie. Don't ruin it for me, Guy.
Yeah. See, Nichelle's such a sweetie, and yeah, that one. I'm like, why did we do that? Why? Oh, boy.
I heard it was a joke, and then everyone was like, no, we'll do it.
Michelle said, good. Yeah, I'll do it.
So and Michelle's like, I'm game.
I'm game. I'll do
and
it. Like,
you know what? That's cool, but still kind of scary.
They found a way to try to beam him out, and they track him. They get a lock on him. They start beaming him.
He's like trapped in that beam for like 6 minutes.
It's a long time.
It's really disturbing.
Just long enough for Dathan to get really pummeled.
He got whacked by Tristar.
Really, really does look like this is like the awesomest blatant plot device ever.
Yeah.
We need to keep Picard from helping Dathan. What are we going to do? I don't know. You know what we could do? We could have O'Brien just beam him up, but not quite, and then leave him back on the planet. That works.
It actually does work pretty good for that.
It works really well, but it's like it's pretty like straightforward.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It seems almost too contrived.
Probably the most contrived part of the episode.
Yeah, but I mean,
I'd go for that.
But it does work.
It's a good episode. It's one of my favorites. So understand when I knock this, it's it's with love.
You're just finding the fine cracks in the foundation.
I mean, that's me. On Synthaholics, I like to think that anything we knock is because we want it to be better.
Even though this is well over 20 years old.
It's tough. It's tough love. We tough love things here on Synthaholics. Praise them.
Like
constructive criticism.
I was reading David Gerold's The World of Star Trek, and I remember this many, 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 many years ago reading I must have been 15, 16 or whatever. And he was talking about all of the problems with Star Trek II. All of the little and he said, he said, don't get me wrong, I love this movie, but the Reliant and the Enterprise are going at 1/4 of light speed, yet they're coming at each other like arthritic dinosaurs. And I thought about that and I was like, I just never really comprehended that before. And then he was like, and did you ever notice that the Reliant must be going backwards because the stars are going in reverse for the Reliant? And I was like, I never. Wow!
Thanks for ruining it.
And I was like, so every time I watch it now, I'm like, thanks, David.
Well, I just think the technology wasn't there to convey the speed. Because, if you look at the original Star Wars 77, like, all the spaceflight scenes on the Death Star run are just so painfully slow. When these things got to be moving, like, wicked quick.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is to film things. It's just...
Yeah,
it's hard to convey speed.
And they're filming these models and stuff like that.
That are still, and basically the movement's coming from the camera.
Right,
exactly. If you move the camera that quick, you're going to see just a blur.
Right, exactly.
Well, and the truth is, in real life, if you were to be going at 1/4 of light speed, they'd never see each other.
Right. No, yeah, absolutely.
If you read David Weber's Honor Harrington novels are pretty good about that kind of relaying of information, with the they're there, they've launched all their missiles and now they're 100 million miles past them,
Yeah.
And they're hoping that the missiles hit.
Right.
They're behind us somewhere,
space is actually pretty weird when you think about that kind of stuff, is how fast in the immense amount of space that you would have to traverse just to get to places.
Have to suspend disbelief.
Yeah.
Thanks, David.
Yeah, thanks.
Not you, David. But
you're
David.
Welcome. David. I try to disappoint wherever I can. That's why I'm here, guys.
That's why you're here. It's the other David. David Droll.
Oh, sorry. I try to take credit.
Who I actually really love. He's a good guy.
Well, getting back to our Trillian captain who's got
bleeding white stuff out his nose.
Yeah, he got beat up.
Going up his forehead.
Yeah, so Picard didn't get beamed up. He's back whole. They stop beaming him because they can't get a good lock on him. And he goes to the captain, and the Temerian captain is just a big mess. And he brings him back to the little campfire site.
Yep.
And Picard is trying to help him.
Picard apparently makes this new fire because it was burned out in the morning.
Maybe he has a couple embers. It's possible. The embers are still hot.
Maybe.
You could start it up again if you had a couple embers. Or maybe Temerian just said, arms wide open. I'm half dead, but I'll just make this for you, Picard.
I'll freeze to death quicker than,
Then I'll die from my wounds.
Maybe Dathan brought a fire starter with him, and so he hands it to Picard or something.
Yeah, that could be it.
Maybe. We never see how he starts his fire, but we know he's better at it than Picard, or more prepared.
Right.
Well, I think Picard's any which way. Picard came down with, like, the coat on his back, and that's about it.
Yeah.
So unless you figure out how to start a fire with your communicator.
I didn't even bring a snack.
Rub the batteries together. Rub the batteries together.
I wish I brought a granola.
It's been 2 days. I'm hungry.
Wish I left a granola bar in my jacket.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dathan tells Picard about the story of Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. Tanagra on the ocean.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, tell me a story. He's like, timber is arms wide. Like, it's like, you know, tell me something. And Picard's like, I don't want to tell stories. And then he gets so disappointed. He's like, ah. He like starts to turn his back on the car. He's like, you're hopeless. Like,
I'm going to just die.
I'm going to just
You let me get beat up by this thing and you won't even tell me a story on my deathbed.
He's like, you're like half beamed out. You ran away.
I have one request on this earth.
And you're going to deny me my one request anyway, because like, I was like, it doesn't matter if you don't understand it. You just want to hear it anyway. And so he tries to tell the story of Gilgamesh and as close to, not allegory, metaphor as possible.
Right.
And then it turns out as he's telling the story, it turns out that they are the story of Gilgamesh in a way.
Right. Right. It's a cool little round circle there that they came with that story. But the captain really liked that. Really enjoyed that that story, the Gilgamesh story.
And apparently so did Berman, because that was the point where Berman came around, was with Gilgamesh. So,
well, if you're going to put Gilgamesh in there, I'm on board.
I'm okay. You put Gilgamesh in there.
Only if they put Gilgamesh in Threshold, maybe then it would have been better.
Oh yeah. Gilgamesh and Threshold.
I don't think anything's going to save Threshold. Nothing's going to make that any better.
We can only dream.
Some of these things were knocking because, you know, we love the show and stuff like that. But some of these were like, well, as my mom would say, that's a bless your heart. You know,
yeah. Bless
you. That's
heart.
About the best you can
you
do.
You've tried your best, and you failed.
That's the problem with the Threshold. I don't think they tried their best at all.
Brain. What is brain? I mean, it's like Spock's brain. You know, that's of course another one where you're like, yeah.
Yeah, I still that one. I can still watch over some of the other ones, but let's
yeah.
Turnabout Intruder, yeah, that's a pretty bad one.
We kind of went on Turnabout Intruder last time.
Yeah, that's a pretty bad one. What was the other one we were talking about?
Women aren't allowed to pilot
Charlie
starships.
Charlie X is kind of hard to watch.
Square of Gothos.
Square of Gothos.
Shades of Grey.
Ooh, Shades of Grey.
Yeah. What's the Empath one? Where they're
Empath?
I hate that one. Oh, my God. It's the worst. Anyways.
You mean Toss the Empath, the original series one?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Empath. It's just called the Empath.
It's just, it's awful. Just,
and you know, you can tell totally that they're like, we don't have any more money left, so let's just strip the set and make it all black.
It's all black.
And have them just stand around.
There's nothing on the set besides like a bed here and a couple little props. Yeah. It's like a Shakespearean play, except they're in Star Trek uniforms.
And we're going to steal the heads that we used from the cage and pull them out of mothballs and stick them on people.
And I hate that empath girl. I don't even know what her name is, but she's just, I just don't like her look on her face. She's all mimish and
she's like gapey mouthy.
Yeah. It's,
I don't know. Oh man.
I can't do it.
Cover your eyes.
Yeah. Ooh, that's definitely one of those where you watch it in a date. That's an episode that dates Star Trek.
Because
that's like the oh, women have to look all gapey mouthy and oh God. Please stop. Yeah. And of course, you know, we got over that, luckily. But now you watch it and you're like, oh.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. It's hard to watch. It is like when they removed the cover of the Ark of the Covenant in Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
When you see that, just, Marion, shut your eyes. Don't look at it.
Don't look at it. Hide your eyes.
So should we get back to Darmok?
Do you remember where we were in Darmok?
Well, the captain has died. Yeah, they told the story of Gilgamesh and the captain died. At the same time,
it's magically morning.
Riker is basically ready to open fire and start fighting with the, because they did realize that with their scanners, which is odd that they can actually scan.
They can
the
scan, but they can't communicate or beam or
they anything actually
else.
Say that in a line of dialogue, so they cover that.
I know, but it's still weird.
It's still very quinkety.
Still a little weird, contrived.
Yeah. So, anyways, they can they know that the captain has the Temerian captain's dead. Picard's still alive.
And the creature is coming back.
The creature is coming for seconds.
Triceracop has abandoned his post.
Right.
And is bloodthirsty.
Exactly. So at that time, they're going to take a couple shots at the Temerian ship.
Lower the scattering field so they can get Picard back.
Unfortunately, Enterprise gets their ass kicked.
They get their nacelle blown out. Like Temerians are like, go for the what makes you go. They're like,
they can't even retreat.
One of the smart Star Trek races. Like, I don't see people go for the nacelles often enough. I mean, like, if I was a tactician on an enemy ship, I'm like, go for the bridge and or go for the engine.
Right.
Make sure they can't even limp away.
We saw the bridge get blown up in
one episode of Enterprise.
Well, yeah. That was, of course, it was an alternate reality, too.
Was that
one of my favorites of Enterprise, actually.
The Mirror Universe?
No.
No.
It was like they were stuck in the expanse and a generation ship came, and it was the story of the generation ship or whatever.
It's not Enterprise Cubed. It's the other one.
I don't remember that one.
Season 3.
And they end up on SETI Alpha 6. There's actually some really funny stuff that you're like, huh, you guys were paying attention. Because the Zindi weapon appears on Earth, blows up the Earth, and that's the one where Archer has the thing in his brain that makes him forget. So he keeps waking up, and it's been a couple of years, and he can't remember anything since the last time.
And like T'Pol takes care of him.
Yeah, oh my god! I forgot about this episode.
It's a great episode. We'll have to do it like soon.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful episode. It's really well done. It's one of the only ones I like from season 3 of Enterprise.
Yeah,
because I really didn't particularly care for the Zindi arc at all.
Yeah, I thought the Zindi kind of dragged out too long.
I love season 4 of Enterprise, actually a couple of them like Carbon Creek are not bad from season 2.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
And Broken Bow is actually really good.
Probably
from season 1.
Probably one of the best series openers.
Yeah, yeah. Season 1 is a little – it has some good spots. Season 2 starts picking up. The Zindi thing kind of really drags out.
I really like the Zindi arc because I was proud for Star Trek doing like a whole arc on something.
Mm. Yeah, well, and not only that, they were obviously doing a 9/11 analogy, which is impressive since Broken Bow was postponed because of 9/11.
Yeah,
right.
I don't know if you guys remember, but I mean, they were supposed to air Broken Bow like September 10th or September 12th, 2001. So because of 9/11, they postponed it and pushed it out. So I mean, you know, Enterprise was sort of born off of 9/11.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of calls back to like terrorism, and they're trying to address all that kind of stuff during Enterprise, which is, you know, interesting. For that time period, because there wasn't a lot of dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, there really wasn't. But
we're just doing this.
And we rabbit hole really well. Are you sure you want me on the show?
Because yeah, I know.
Keep rabbit holing you guys, like majorly.
Right.
Well,
right.
If you go back and listen to our early episodes, we rabbit hole ourselves like all the time. we've only just like the last 10 episodes gotten good at not rabbit holing ourselves until we do the discussion. So
it's all
good. It's like a classic episode of Synthaholics.
So there you go. Warp
it's retro.
Itself. Hit the warp nacelle.
Hit the warp nacelle. Enterprise is kind of messed up, but they do get Picard back onto the ship, and
he rushes to the bridge.
And Picard does his typical save the day, stand on the bridge, deliver the lines that are needed to quell the aliens' fury, and everything is fine.
So God, a lot of time.
His eyes uncovered.
Yeah. I mean, it is impressive. I do seriously doubt from a man who can't start fire could possibly put all that together that easily.
I'm pretty sure like some of those phrases Picard never heard that he spouted off to them.
I think
one or two of them.
Yeah, but he was there with, you know, hanging out.
Yeah,
all night
I mean
them,
you
so.
Could have, you know.
And then not only that, you know, the only thing I'll give is Picard is pretty adept to, you know, being the ambassador to the Federation for all these things. So he's really good at these kind of things. I forgot, what was the creatures that he had to read the crazy long list of?
Oh, I can't remember. But yeah, he had like the – yeah.
He had to read this crazy thing.
Where he ultimately says, I would like to have the Grazarians
yeah.
As the mediators.
Right.
And since they don't wake up for another 150 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well. That was a great – that was, but that's typically what he does. He does that, and he does it well. So he you know, basically bridged the gap between them and the Temerians. Temerians were happy. They let them go without just getting into a fight. And we assume at that point there must be some kind of dialogue established between
them. Treaty sort of. Like Picard's going to have to brief everyone on the basics.
Well, I'm sure now that they've – broken that down, now they can have their linguist and the anthropologist and all these people come and study and figure out what they're talking about. So I'm sure there's going to be
with sails unfurled.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. So and that's how it kind of wraps up. Picard just talking to Riker about the sacrifice that that they made to, you know, to make that. To make
make contact, finally.
Yeah, that they could actually talk to each other. So.
Here he comes to save the day. Captain Picard is on his way.
That should be his
name. It could be worse. It could be Wes.
Yeah. But that is...
Gee golly, I don't know what you're saying.
Jeez, I don't...
Mom!
Ashley Judd's on the ship.
I got a boner. All right, so... takeaways, feelings about this episode. Dave, I know this is one of your all-time favorites, Stuck on the Desert Island episodes.
Yeah, yeah, it was one of the ones that I brought up initially, and I was really excited to get to talk about it for a whole episode. And it's just one of those really well-put-together episodes that just – it just worked. Like, it's just so poignant on how communication works. And to me, this is like – almost how it would really be like to meet an alien race. Because, I mean, we just assume, like, everyone's syntax is going to be the same. All you got to do is translate the words. And I'm like, well, this is a lot more realistic as far as space science fiction meeting aliens go.
Right.
That their syntax is going to be completely different, not just translating the words.
Yeah. No, so, it's very true.
So, I mean, that came out. You know, also mentioned Picard got his sweet leather jacket.
As one of the reasons his favorite.
Yes, yes. The
awesome.
Picard became like an awesome dude.
Hey, hanging out on the side of the jukebox.
You know, yeah,
pumping quarters and like, for the songs.
He'd be right up there with the Fonz.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Just hitting it with his fist.
Yeah, Picard. Yeah, since he doesn't know how to start fire, he hits things with his fists.
That's right.
That's so Picard.
Exactly.
Fist.
No, but it's just the acting on the episode is real strong. It's really strong, Picard. The dialogue.
Quintessential Picard.
Yeah. It is a very Picard episode, and just the interaction between the two actors is amazing. So it's just pretty much the whole thing. The whole thing just works. I mean, there's the contrived transporter thing, and then, like, you know, the contrived, like, oh, well, he just knows everything at the end. But, like, otherwise it's so solid, and the allegory and the – it's just all there. Mm-hmm. It's very Star Trek.
Okay.
I agree.
Faith, how about
you? Got a great performance out of Paul Winfield, and this is like one of his last performances that, you know, he did before. I think he passed away. When did he pass away? He passed away really close to McCoy when we lost D. Kelly.
Really?
Yeah. He had AIDS, I believe.
Oh, wow.
It's one of the last performances that we've got from Paul Winfield in this, and of course he's a beloved actor because of his action as Terrell. We get a great performance out of Rex Pearson as Triceracop.
We keep referencing Triceracop from Kung
spent
Fury.
The entire day in a suit on a green screen at stage 9. You know, we get Ashley Judd for, you know, Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ashley Judd does not hurt Star Trek
at
all.
No, she does not. She only helps the cause.
But you got to give Joe Manusky a props for writing that screenplay. That's a tough one to write. You know, you almost have to. You think he has to write an entire culture's worth of story that he can only bring a little bit into.
Create enough mythology that they can use to write that script.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I mean, like just the effort that clearly had to go into this. A, to make them so weird, and then B, to make it work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because, I mean, you could have been weird, and it could have just been like, this could have been an awful episode very easily.
Because
it has all the makings to be bad if it just didn't come off right.
Yeah.
And
Faith, how about you? What's any feelings, thoughts, takeaways after watching this?
I agree with David on a lot of this. Like, it's obvious that they put a lot of effort into the backstory of it just to give it a very realistic feel. Like, it'd be really easy to get hung up on a lot of the logic gaps in this episode, but they filled it with such a really good story that you can look past it.
Yeah.
And what about you, A.A. Ron?
I gotta say, opposite from Rick Berman, I like the concept of this. I just don't really like the execution.
What's lacking for you in the execution?
Well, a couple things. One,
is this where you're talking about the Temerian technology?
Well, okay. Well, I'll get into that. But first, I do like the acting. I think the acting's all fine and good. The writing gets a little bit like, because they speak in the allegory and they repeat over and over again. My eyes start to roll after a while. I'm like, all right, I get it.
I just think if they went too far with the dialect, then the audience would have been too lost.
I agree. I get it. I get that. Yeah. No, I get that. I mean, it's totally – but so that gets – and I've seen this episode quite a few times, and it's just like every time I see it, I'm just like, all right.
He's had to watch it at least two times for the show, guys, so –
That's right. At least twice. So the other side of it is that I, like I said, I like the concept of it. And I, like you were touching on that before, is that if we ever did meet an alien race, it's very likely we would not be able to communicate. We can't – I mean, like whales and dolphins definitely have some speech pattern. We don't know what the hell they're saying to each other. Like, nope. I mean, there are some – scientists that's all they're doing. They are literally studying the speech patterns of like dolphins, and they are making some small breakthroughs of what certain sounds and whistles mean when they're down there making those recordings and watching their interactions. But they don't know what they're saying. They don't know the full, and it is quite amazing that, you know, here we have a pretty intelligent mammal that are talking to each other, and we have never taken the time to really study what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite astounding.
Mm-hmm.
Unless the only way they could speak to us is if, like, they understood our syntax and had universal translators and spoke to us on our level.
Right.
Because I don't know if we'd be able to understand some alien syntax, like, right out.
But that's my point, is that we have intelligent mammals.
On our own planet.
On our own planet that literally, you know, traverse underwater.
We've got trapped in SeaWorld. Come on.
And things that we've, you know, we'll never see because we're humans. We don't live in their world. And the things that we could probably get from them, just knowledge alone, and we don't even bother because they're like, what do we need to talk to them for?
Talk to me, Flipper.
It's like we have to go get whales or something.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But not just that.
Wait.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-uh.
But we have
sort of broached this a little. I mean,
yeah, no, but exactly. But here's the thing: is like, you know, because there's no money in it, we don't care about it. But anyways, just going back to Darmok, the other side is the way to communicate with the technology. I have a really hard time thinking that they, unless they also communicate through some mathematical equations or something like that, that they can communicate through that way. I have a hard time they could even construct a ship and have the high society without being able to express themselves.
Yeah, like how do you like build a ship in allegory?
Exactly.
So, I mean, you'd have to like know.
I'm sorry. I was going to say one of the things that I love about this particular episode is it has the same effect that we were talking about before, with the it was an episode that you end up talking about.
Yeah,
you know, you have a discussion about this. And my wife and I were the ones that just had this long discussion about this particular episode. And that was actually her thing, too. How do they communicate how do you build a language that's all allegory?
Right.
Right? So I have this theory, you see. This is my theory. My theory is that the Temerians are telepathic up until puberty.
Hmm.
So while children, they're conveying these stories back and forth like a pool, but then they lose that ability. It becomes vestigial in some way. And once they do, then, you know, they can only, they don't need to communicate straight up. They just say, oh, this is like that one time, you know,
right.
Or that other thing. Remember this story, remember that story. And then they just communicate with each other in allegory. It's kind of like, because, I mean, we see it to some degree with, like, us, the Trekkies. You know, we'll sit there and, oh, yeah, this is totally Ponfar, man. This is Ponfar. And it's like everybody understands what we're talking about.
It's always
Ponfar. When you're talking, anybody who's not us, you know, they're like, I don't get what the hell you guys are talking about.
Oh, that was like Mike Kobayashi Maru, man.
Yeah.
Did you have that? It's like total Kobayashi.
So you can almost, almost see us talking in that way. So in a way, Darmok is kind of like the way Trekkies will communicate with one another, too. I mean, especially if you take, you know, sort of the extreme view, like the Get a Life sketch from Saturday Night Live.
Right.
You know, the Trekkies, those Trekkies, which are kind of an extreme and kind of stereotyped. But it is true. I mean, there are times where I've talked to other people in our group and we're all sitting there. We even have our own, like, language. You start adding things like shiny and, you know, and aim to misbehave and stuff like that that we got from Firefly. And, you know, you get all of this, like, language that I don't need to explain to you guys whenever I say I aim to misbehave.
Right.
You know, it doesn't mean that I'm literally going to go out and misbehave like my mom's going to come over and spank me. I mean, it, you know, it's like I'm talking about causing trouble some way or another. You know, and so, it, you know, you say stuff like that, and in a way you can kind of see how we've developed almost an allegory communication line between ourselves in the geek community. So to some degree, I can kind of see it making sense, and especially if we were all telepathic to begin with.
The only problem, I mean, the biggest problem I see with the technology in their culture is that they would have to know the story about how every single piece of technology was developed,
right.
So they could tell the story. I'm like, oh, this is how, you know, you make a light bulb. Oh,
Pentium, because when the chip made. Right. You know, it's just, I mean,
it's just like,
and it's not that it's like, it's not that that's impossible. It's just that it's so improbable. They'd be like, you know, like, how do you tell your doctor that, you know, you're, you know, having kidney failure, you know, like, I mean, like, I
Bob,
mean,
when his kidneys fail.
Darmok. It's 5 years after Tanagra. Kidney failure.
Kidney failure. Yeah, exactly.
It's just like,
doctor. Jim. When his heart hurts.
Yeah.
Quick, get him to the...
Exactly, you know.
Spock, when his brain went missing.
Yes. No, but it's just like...
failed.
But yeah, but it is hard to, like, really imagine a whole society could have that much... that many stories and aggregate that much stories and all know them. You know, there must be that, like, obscure reference of old story that's like, who's that? You know, and maybe it's like only, like, you know... a couple thousand people know that story or something like that, you know.
Hey, I've got an idea to build on your theory, guy. Maybe everyone loses that telepathic ability except for, like, one or two village elders, and they become, like, the babysitters. So they have to pass on all their knowledge to the kids before, you know, all their accumulated knowledge to the kids so that they can know who built the light bulb and how to do that so they can do it in the future. Like, you know, how to build warp drive and how to do that in the future. How to build world shielding things so you can meet other people and have them fight some creature on a planet.
Well, sure. I mean, you think about, like, the way that the writing was developed. We started with hieroglyphs, which were ideograms. So, I mean, they meant something. You know, the Japanese and the Chinese, they have a writing system that's based solely on a character meaning a thing. So this character means sun, and this character means moon, and this character means origin. And so in a way, you know, it took a long time for people. It's really hard for like Westerners like us to parse Eastern languages because our brains really just don't process that really well. Because we've learned phonemes. We've learned that P means P, and that's what we've learned. And so you go over to Japan and they've got all these elaborate characters. Yeah, and it's like, what does that mean? Well, that means mother, and that means I tell people, because I can read Japanese, I tell people I can read Chinese menus. And they're like, really? What does it say? And I'm like, well, I don't know, because I can't pronounce it, because Chinese is a different spoken language. But I can read the ideograms and know what they're talking about. This is like chicken soup, and this is beef curry. And how do you know? Well, that says chicken, and that says soup.
Right.
You
know? Yeah. Right. But the thing,
but I don't know how to say it
but
in Chinese.
I mean, I am correct in saying, Guy, that like the Japanese, they have two sets of writing. They have their older type of writing, and then they have more modern type.
Kanji.
That's
they actually have a number of different writing languages. They've got a phonetic, and then they've got an ideographic. But Chinese doesn't. I mean, they took the. It's a long history about how.
Oh, I'm sure it dates back thousands of years. Yeah, exactly.
People kept coming over from China and giving them the language, and they kept going, this is great. And then they kept messing it up, and then they'd come back over again. Well, what'd you do with the language? We turned it into these this phonetic language. And they're like, no. Here's it again. So that's what you've got. You've got one layer that's phonographic, and then you've got another layer that's ideographic. But,
right.
But Chinese is all ideographic.
I've never seen a lot of Chinese or Japanese like written language, but at my first college we had a lot of Korean students, and making friends with a couple of them, they showed me how like write my name in Korean, and you know they're still symbolic, but like the like it's almost closer to one to one. I mean, at least my name, it looked like, you know, the D's looked the same, and like, you know, it was like, oh, this, it's symbols, but it still is kind of like a phonetic language almost. Mm-hmm. And like they're like, it's like da-e-vid or something like that, like the way that it would be pronounced over there, or you know how it's written, that's how it would be pronounced. It was really interesting.
Right. And even our English language, like you were saying before, Guy, was that, you know, all our, you know, A to, you know, to Z, those are all meant something at some time, and they slowly morphed into what we have now as our, you know, alphabet. But before they were precursors. I went to, you know, design school, and there we spent a lot of time on fonts, and you know, you can go real far back on a lot of, like you said, some hieroglyphs and other types of ancient, you know, writing that they all were derivative of, and we just picked and choose over thousands of years to make our alphabet. So,
and then, you know, the great thing about Greek was their letters were numbers too. So, like, you know, names were not only names, they were numbers.
Right.
And Nero Caesar in Greek spelled out 666. That's what the number of his name.
And then we got all the way into our, you know, computer age, where we have, you know,
binary and hexadecimal
and sure, and Comic Sans.
Comic Sans. That's the important one, is the Comic Sans.
Well, no. The important one is the Final Frontier font, which is what I do this.
Actually, I was thinking so I hate Comic Sans, and I hate
most people do.
And I hate, what's the other one? I hate
I don't know.
Papyrus.
Papyrus. Oh,
I hate those two. Those are the two I can't stand. Every time I'm like, why did you choose this font?
Welcome to the Fonts Podcast. We talk about fonts we hate.
So anyways, going back to Darmok, because we fell into another rabbit hole.
I would real quickly like to make a quick correction. I looked up Paul Winfield. Paul Winfield died in 2004 of a heart attack related to diabetes.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know where I had heard that he had AIDS, but I was totally wrong.
Is it like those Facebook pages posts where they're like, so and so died of, you know, they have some crazy thing and everyone's like freaking out.
Bubonic plague.
And they all of a sudden they freak out, and then like the guy goes, I'm not dead.
You know? I'm totally still alive.
No, I'm not quite dead yet. I think you'll go for a walk.
I feel happy. So, but that's still, I still have a hard time believing that they have made that jump. And they're enough that they can kick, you know, Enterprise's ass and outsmart them in every corner, you know, by this very odd language. I mean, I understand it's a TV
lots
show.
Of examples.
It's like, how do you just to describe what you want? You know, like, you know, I need
maybe
you know,
engineers have a separate language. Maybe they're explorers. Like
that's a good point.
Maybe the regular vernacular is this, but engineers speak in a different way, and maybe none of them were engineers.
Right, and that's a good point.
I just don't have enough memory to hold all of this.
Yeah, right.
I mean, imagine going back to 1710 and saying that to somebody. I don't have enough memory to process this.
Yeah, you'll be like, what?
What? Are you talking about fish?
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's the word process would mean fish to them, you know, because right. That's how you do when you cut the skin and all that stuff off of it. So to some degree, you can see that even with our evolution of language, you know, we've kind of moved along. You know, I'm not a real big fan of that. I mean, the word fanatic, does, you know, has been shortened to fan, and now they're going to think you're not a big fan.
Like, what
you know,
does that
with
mean?
A big fan,
yeah. Right? Right.
You know,
I don't know, but like fanatic sometimes has a negative connotation to it, whereas a fan that cools you down is more positive. It's like, oh, that's nice. I'm cool.
Yeah, but
it's cool to be a fan.
If I sit there and say, I'm not a big fan.
You know, I get what you're saying. Words definitely change meaning, especially if you go like, you know, you go watch a 1940s movie and they said like, you know, we had a gay old time compared to now.
Or gee golly, that's swell instead of hey, that's cool.
Well, no, just gay old time.
Yeah.
It would be like, well, what were you doing in the bedroom, you know? And then, you know,
all of a sudden that has a different.
Difference, like, or let's go, I'm going to go smoke a fag, you know, what does that mean? You know, it's like, it just means.
It's like having a gay old time.
Yeah, no, but I mean, things do change.
Smoking a fag is having a gay old time.
Yeah, yeah, no, but things change quite a bit, you know, and it's like our connotations of words, and things change words. Like, the words obviously have double meaning. I mean, that's beauty of poetry. Is that you can say one thing and that word could have multiple meanings within that word, and that's, you know, the wonders of language itself.
And
so.
Context.
Yeah.
Which is the whole problem of the episode, because they had no context over the words that were being said.
Absolutely.
Well, and Troy had even said that at some point in time. She was talking about Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
If she was saying, you know, if you're saying, you know, Juliet on the balcony.
Right.
We all know what that means,
right.
And we all know that we've got, you know, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo. We all can pull that up. We already know our Shakespeare, or at least some of us should know our Shakespeare anyway. But, you know, we can pull that up. You know, if I say, E tu, Brute,
you know
what every ear knows that I've just been stabbed in the back.
Right, right.
You know, I don't need to say anything else. You just double-crossed me,
right.
You know. Because and that's totally because of the reference of that. So, you know, it's aside from words that are obviously brought into our language, like twerking, which, you know, that would take forever to try to explain to somebody in the 1700s.
Butt shake.
It means you
shaking
your
butt a lot like my
jiggling unfurled.
Twerking, your sails unfurled.
So, your butt
gluteus unfurled. And shaking in said wind.
Shaking in, yeah, that's you know. But I mean, you can think about that. I mean, there are instances where we would use something like elementary, my dear Watson, eureka. I mean, these are all phrases that we know exactly what they mean, but only in the context of our culture.
Yes.
When I was over in Japan, there were a number of times that, you know, my English speaking counterpart, who was Japanese, I'd say something and he'd just give me this blank look, and I'd be like, "Oh, I just made a cultural reference." You know, I don't know. I had a next door neighbor who was British. And he would say, "Oh, that girl is so fit." And I'd be like, "How do you know she exercises?" You know, and it's just a reference between the two different cultures. Ironically, the Japanese made a car named Fit. And so he and I spent the rest of my time there going, "That car is so fit." And he'd be like, "Shut up."
Well, and, you know, bring on the age thing for myself again is like, I do notice, because I am older than a lot of people around me, is that I some things I'll say and I'll be like, oh, you have no idea what the hell I'm talking about, you know, because I've experienced 20 years of pop culture and society that a lot of people haven't.
Not, yeah.
And even though some may know that, probably 80% don't.
Yeah.
And I've literally, especially, you know, when I'm around younger people, I literally tailor what I say because it's like, I know they don't know what the hell I'm talking about. You know, and it's just, it is weird when you have to do those little things. And it's like, you know, and that's a very small, you know, microscopic
yeah.
way compared to what Guy's talking about when he's, you know, talking to a foreigner and
another foreigner.
And you just say something and they're like, I have no idea what that meant. Yeah, that makes no sense.
We have to attack those people over there. You know, we've got to do something about those people. So Kirk, when he was with the Gorn.
Right.
So now I've conveyed the entire thing. We don't need to worry about me explaining gunpowder.
Right.
Or getting diamonds or getting saltpeter or any of that stuff. We know we're talking about Kirk when he fought the Gorn.
Right.
You know, so if I want to, like, we've got to go over there and we've got to attack these people. So Kirk, when he fought the Gorn. And now all of a sudden we've conveyed everything. And I actually don't have to explain to you how to do gunpowder and how to build it because you saw the episode, you know. And it's not scientifically correct. Thank you, Mythbusters. But
Well, I've got an exception to that.
It blew up.
But it blew up, right.
They were on a planet. Maybe it wasn't regular bamboo. Maybe it was stronger bamboo. Maybe it was stronger type of quartz. And they're like, well, it's like next to impossible to come up with like the correct ratio to make gunpowder because I've got super fine equipment and I could barely do it. Then I'm like, well, they didn't have the super fine equipment when they invented gunpowder originally. So
it wasn't very efficient.
No,
but it's just like they were kind of like, oh, well, this couldn't happen. Well, it had to have. I mean, because someone had invented gunpowder without
this. This is many things we have to suspend our disbelief. This is
right. We give props for them at least to try. In the 1960s, we had Lost in Space. So, I mean, honestly, the fact that they were even remotely close.
Yeah.
It's not
right.
Bad at
right,
all.
Right. Exactly.
We give them props.
You know,
but
at least
yeah.
Star Trek had the right, you know, ingredients to make gunpowder. I mean, it's all like plausible, especially given our alien types of wood and stuff like that that might be stronger than
yeah, but
Cochran,
just
when he went warp one.
Yes.
Honestly, you could theoretically see how we would get to an established series
right.
of stories.
The only thing is I think I'm kind of going with Dave's side of this with the idea of a maybe different divisions, like if you have an engineering scientific division of society, maybe segmented, that they have their own allegory stories built within it. So like Edison when he invented the light bulb or you know,
yeah.
something like that
yeah.
to that nature. And so maybe there was enough of those so they can kind of get down to the more granular level of whatever they're actually talking about, you know. So if it is building a microprocessor or a warp nacelle, that they can actually communicate these things to each other in a reasonable amount of, you know, and then they can go back to the broad stories that everyone knows.
Without going through like sure. a whole paragraph or something like that.
Right.
But I mean, like, I mean, even I know like modern day and kids and just, you know, texting and like just, you know, Facebook type communication where like everything is like, you know,
Snapchat and Tinder.
Know, yeah. Snapchat, Tinder, where you're like speaking in like, you know, just like letters.
140 character bursts.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Twitter. I mean, like you're speaking in like these really short bursts and sometimes you're not even saying words at all. You're just saying a bunch of letters and certain strings.
LOL.
Yeah. Right. Right.
That are just, you know,
yep.
That's also culture. That's almost another language.
It is.
It's not exactly allegory, but I mean, it's almost another language into itself. And I mean, when I was younger, you know, I was in the age that was basically like coming up with these.
Right.
And now where I'm not.
So it's your fault.
Yes.
Thanks,
it's my
David.
Fault. Yes. You got to thank me. You are so welcome. But yeah, I was in the age where that was like kind of coming out, you know, with the early internet age where all these abbreviations are starting. And now like, you know, I still talk to people online through text and everything, but new kids are making new, you know, or you know, new abbreviations, and I'm sometimes lost now. I'm like, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, well, and there have been a number of them that I don't know. But I was thinking about this also. I mean, do you guys know what a Turing test is?
Yes, I've seen Ex Machina.
So, if a Turing test is something you apply to a computer. It's a test invented by Alan Turing, who was one of the early establishers of artificial intelligence computer type theories. But the idea is that, it's a test applied to see whether someone will believe this is a computer or not.
Have heard of this test, yes.
So if you sit there and you say something like, oh, did it pass a Turing test?
Mm-hmm.
That in and of itself conveys a lot of data all at once. And if you think that, so it lends credence to what you were saying earlier about the idea that maybe there is a caste of engineers in the Temerians. There's like an engineering caste who has their own little pool of data that they're passing back and forth.
Yeah.
And then all they have to say is, we're going to build this warp engine. They don't say we're building a warp engine. They say, oh, this is a Cochrane.
Right. Right.
And then you've got the Cochrane and we put together, warp coils. And I mean, even when we talk ourselves, I'm sitting here talking about Bussard collectors, warp coils, flux chillers, things like that. This is all bringing up images in all four of our minds.
Right.
Because we know the lore of Star Trek, but none of these things are real.
Right.
I mean, so to someone who's not a
yet,
but soon. To a non-Trekkie, you've got people who are going, what in the world are you guys talking
about?
Yeah,
it's all gibberish. Yeah.
And hopefully if they're listening to this, they are a Star Trek fan.
Right. But I mean, it would be the same thing as if I were to say, that's pass interference. You know what that means.
Right.
Because then, of course, to any sports fan, that means they're going to get the ball on that yardage at that down point. I don't need to say that.
Right.
You understand the rules of the game. Therefore, you understand what pass interference means. And, of course, you even add to it the referees that just come out and just do this. And, they make a hand gesture. And you're like, ooh, personal foul, pass interference, And all these people know all this. There's a certain amount of. By the way, my mother spoke fluent football, so gotcha. I speak fluent football.
Gotcha.
Not really a football fan. I just grew up with it in the house. My mom bled blue and orange.
Is that right?
She'd be totally psyched about the fact that the Broncos are off to the Super Bowl. She'd be completely bonkers about that.
I grew up with football and baseball in the house, and I still don't know anything about it because I tried not to care. My dad took me to professional games of baseball, and I brought my Game Boy so I could enjoy something.
It was a thing that I would
do. Weren't those kids.
I'd draw. I'd bring like a pad and paper, and I'd sit in the couch next to my mom, and my mom would do like war dances every time the Broncos would make a touchdown. She'd scream and run around in circles. It was really funny.
Yeah.
And entertainment. High entertainment. So anyway, but I mean, it's the same thing. That's almost incomprehensible to us. To some degree, who are not sports fans, unless you grew up in the household. So there's all these. I don't know. I mean, could you build an entire culture though, based solely on these ideograms? And so that's why I think that the idea of them being telepathic would help, because it'd be like pooling all that information early.
Well, even if they were still slightly telepathic, that would be very helpful for them to communicate as well.
We never see them again.
We don't know much about them. But, I think the story is enough that you understand that they completely have a different system of communication. And that's probably – I can't think of another episode that deals with that except maybe when we get into Enterprise where they don't have the universal translator.
But that's still not a syntax problem. It's all a translation
problem.
Then
we have the universal
Enterprise.
Hoshi.
Yeah. I
think he said something about smelly socks. Yeah.
No, but my point only being is that we don't really see that too often in Star Trek. I mean, once in a while we'll see someone speak a different language. Obviously, Klingons get their official language. Vulcans have some smattering of language through there.
Exactly.
But we don't get anything else other than here and there. But it's, for the most part, we get the – I mean, it's all – everyone's speaking English because it's possibly through the Universal Translator.
Yeah.
And but this is a nice exercise to see what would happen if just that just doesn't work.
Yeah, it's just a one-off episode. We don't get to learn more about their culture. It would probably be too hard to do an episode unless they just totally fixed the Universal Translator and was like, oh, now they speak perfect English, which is another –
that would kind of ruin the point because then you'd be like – you know, ha, we're here with the Temerians, and the Temerians are like, hi, we're here, you know.
Hey.
Yeah.
Then you just have another alien.
Yeah, it would just be too hard to do a show. It would just be nice to see them maybe walking around the background or something. So they may be. I have no idea.
Just be.
I doubt it, though.
Arms wide open. So, yeah, but that's how I feel. And like I said, the show kind of wears on me a little bit. I like the acting in it. I like the premise of it. Some of the things are a little bit like, okay, you know, but that's just me. That's me. I mean, I don't hate it. I just don't really like it as much as you guys like it.
Well, we all have opinions, and I think when we come down in different spots on episode topics, I think it makes for usually more interesting episodes because then we can like, oh, what did you not like about it? And like, you know, what's your thoughts on it? So that way we can, like, you know, dig into it deeper. Because whenever we all agree on something, it's just like, oh, and then the episodes are really short. And I'm like, what happened? Why is the episode so short?
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of like last week's episode.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot less ridicule.
It clocked in under an hour. It's like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Distant Origin. It's always...
We all, like, loved it. And what was that, Faith?
I said it was for a moment we were very surprised at how we managed to do that.
Yeah. It doesn't happen often.
Yeah. Well, so that's basically what we have for Darmok. It is probably one of the more iconic Next Generation episodes.
It's up there with The Inner Light and many others like that who are, you know, highly regarded.
Yeah, yeah. It's superior writing, I have to say. I mean, there are some things that are a little contrived, but for the most part, it is well written, and it's a totally different take on something that we don't normally see.
Yeah.
So, especially in television. With that said, how's things going with you, Guy? I in Tamberlin land right now, we have the they've gone to condition red. So that's yes, as far as I've gotten. So how are things going on your end?
Well, we're definitely at condition red. Things are going well. I mean, I'm working on the next issue, which will come out on Sunday.
Awesome.
And we're just
same
keep
time
going.
This episode will come out.
Same time as you'll hear this. Go to usstamerlin.com or, you know, hit me up at /USSTamerlin on Facebook. But yeah, I mean, everything's going really well. I'm finally hitting the plot line.
Cool.
You know, without the exposition. We've gone past the exposition.
Right.
I've got to explain everything. Why are we doing this? Now we're finally into the meat of it. So,
why are we doing this?
Yeah, we've got to go through this exposition because in media res is awesome until you realize that you will lose everybody by just dropping them in. There's a whole bunch of bad guys shooting at us. Why? I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
Reasons.
They're just shooting at us. Yeah.
Reasons are the best reasons.
Yeah. Sometimes it's all according to what your audience is, but I do suspect. That Star Trek audiences want full reasons before anything happens.
Just like in Renegades, how is Lexa Khan's daughter? I spent an hour watching this and I still don't know.
Maybe we'll find out.
Reasons.
What was Khan doing? How did he get there?
How did Khan reconstitute himself from the exploded Genesis planet to impregnate a woman 70 years later?
Maybe he left him on
SETI Alpha 5.
Yeah, SETI Alpha 5, or maybe left him on the regular one, hidden somewhere. I don't know.
I don't know. It's just like, I'm just going to leave a sperm sample here.
If you don't mind, yeah. Hang on, guys. I got to go drop off my daughter and leave her hidden under a transporter platform. I'll be right back.
We found this small Indian girl running around regular one. We don't know where she came from.
I don't know.
She seems to be kind of super powerful of some sort or another.
Yes.
She broke my arm.
And that's what scares me about the Renegades episode 2. They're bringing in all these extra actors, and I'm just like, oh, you're going to have to explain how these all people are here. So you're going to forget about your original cast and never explain their stories. Thanks. Well,
we have this sort of thing, and it's kind of a gripe I have with a lot of the fan films, with this, you know, we've got to bring in this stellar awesome thing for you. And I don't mean knock some fan films, because of course I work with a lot of them, and they're, you know, and I love the guys, they're working really hard, but it does seem like sometimes they're trying to outdo themselves with, we've got this actor and this actor and then these 12 actors. It's like a convention.
It reminds me of Homer Simpson's building that website with all the little wingdings and widgets on it that are all making all the crazy noises. And it's just he thinks it makes it better. And it's literally just annoying because you're just like, oh, yeah. My God, this is the most unusable website I've ever seen in my whole entire life.
I think all the actor signing on is just like to make their Kickstarters work.
Yeah, but it's like if you have like three big actors, that should be enough. I would think.
You'd think, even then they just barely scrape by with their minimum, even though they announced all these extra actors coming on the program. So,
yeah, good point.
I'm definitely excited to see what they do with it. I'm just scared none of the stuff they brought up in the first episode is going to pan out because they have to spend all the time in the next episode explaining where these people are going to go. And then we've got the new series coming out, the axe in our suit, and then it's like, are they even going to get another Kickstarter for a third episode? So who knows? I know that the Kickstarter.
I think that Axanar is in its, you know, that's a different story. I kind of feel like, you know, that was one where, I mean, you guys talked about this last time. I was listening to that podcast, and you kind of covered it. But I think I agree with, was it you, Faith, that was saying that you were the devil's advocate on that one?
Oh, yeah.
You know. where you have yeah.
That was me.
Because I think I side with Faith on that one. You know, is the having done artwork and had people kind of walk off with the artwork, it's kind of like, well, it is their IP, and if they want to burn it in effigy, you know, with a swastika written all over it, that's their business. You know, that's their right.
I guess so. I mean, it's just though, what point does certain things become, how do I say it? Like, how does
public domain?
Yeah, public domain when it's beloved by so many. It's like, it's hard. I mean, I do know that the studio obviously has the rights for that, but there does comes a point where, like, I'm not saying the fans dictate, but there should be some respect for the fans that have been around for so long and that they do want something.
Oh, I just, you know,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just saying I fear for future fan films that want
to
be.
It's just that as much as you want it to become public domain, I hate to be the one to state it bluntly, but it never will be. Simple point in fact is this is something that was created by an individual and an entity, and it is always going to be owned by that corporation. You could have the fans overriding these people 1,000,000 to 1, and it doesn't matter. That's still their ownership and their right to dictate what and where and how it is used. And we may not like it. We can pitch a tantrum, but there's nothing we can do about their final decision on it. And as much as that sucks, that's just ultimately where it ends up being.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, like Quantum Leap, I mean, you know, Quantum Leap ticked off all of their fans with their last episode. And Sam Beckett was lost forever. And everybody was like, oh, man, you guys are jerks. You know, but that's their right. I mean, X-Files went off the air kind of torquing off everybody, too.
Right.
It's their right. And the truth is that there's 70 years before Star Trek goes into a semi-public domain. But since they have rebooted their Star Trek and they keep maintaining it.
Right.
It's 70 years from the last time that Enterprise aired at this point in time, or 70 years from when Into Darkness came out. So,
yeah.
You know, we've got a clock ticking before it goes into technical public domain.
I don't mean necessarily. I mean, I get the point because they keep refreshing the franchise and their stories. I mean, obviously, there's going to be a new series coming out soon in a year here. But my point only being is that I would think the studios would give their fans some type of respect. And that's all I'm saying is that I'm not saying that they should have full reins of the creativity of that. And I'm not saying, but it's like that they have any right whatsoever. But there should be some kind of respect. And that's where I sometimes do feel like currently, I don't know if they're totally there. I could be wrong about this, but that's my general feeling on some things.
It does make me kind of wonder, with Kurtzman taking over the helm of the new series, you know, are we going to continue with what fans are kind of not liking about the JJ universe and stuff like that, or not? But the you know, sort of in this whole thing, the truth of the matter is, this is where we vote with our dollar.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where we say, well, you know, you lost us back there. So we don't – I only went into Darkness once, and I never bought the DVD. I didn't like it. Yeah. I didn't like that particular movie. I thought it was a mistake to use Khan. I thought it was a mistake to – if it had been Gary Mitchell, it would have been better. If he had been, you know, Cumberbatch playing Gary Mitchell, would have been a far better thing. But in my opinion, I didn't like – so I voted. I voted with my dollar. I didn't buy a copy of their DVD. I probably will never own that movie. Whereas I actually didn't mind 2009 that much, you know, the new movie, the 2009 movie, so I bought that one.
Yeah.
But, you know, like The Force Awakens, I really liked them. I've been there twice now. I've gone to the theater to see it twice. I will own – we have a bunch of the merchandise that we've purchased for my son and for both my son and myself. So, I mean, I'm voting with my dollar to say, hey, you know what? You did a good job with The Force Awakens. You did not do a good job, in my opinion, with Into Darkness. So I put my money where my mouth was. I voted for Force Awakens, and I voted against Into Darkness. So. And which, you know, makes me feel like a bad Trekkie. Because as a Trekkie, I probably shouldn't have voted against my own franchise. But,
I mean, I don't really disagree with anyone about the state of the franchise. I mean, I understand what Aaron's...
No, you're voting for what is good about it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. On the other hand, I own like 27 different iterations of the original series in VHS and DVD and all kinds of different things. And technically, since I pretty much keep Netflix for that one reason, I pay, you know, $9.99 a month for
it. Yeah, so,
right.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, it depends on how you look at this.
Well, I don't disagree with what Aaron was like. Back to like the CBS thing, I wanted to like throw in 2 cents. I don't disagree with what Aaron said. Where, you know, I feel like, you know, he's kind of right. Where, you know, it would be nice if the studio like gave the fans some slack for, you know, getting to use the property since it's been a dry spell. But I also understand that, you know, CBS has the rights, you know, what Faith and Guy are saying about, you know, their franchise, which is why I was saying, like, I don't know if there's going to be an episode 3 of Renegades or, you know, other kickstarted things. Because if, I mean, the suit is so general, saying Star Trek names, places, and things. So, I mean, like, if they win, which they probably will since CBS is a powerhouse, like, I don't see, like, I mean, I could see them maybe going after other ones or just barring future Kickstarters via the outcome of this court case, which would make all these other web series dead in the water.
We're going with you there, Faith. Go ahead.
The problem we're running into right now is, like, I don't disagree with you guys. I don't disagree with your guys' stance on it. Like, I want these things to succeed, but this is a day and age where things like everybody from cosplayers to people that make the costumes to all of it, everybody is being hit by these lawsuits, and this isn't an international problem right now. It's not just what's going on with Axar. This is across the board. This is not an individual mindset at all. The corporate in general across the globe is looking at the way individuals are handling the entertainment industry and going, no, this is our baby. We don't want it handled like that. And to me, ideally, the best way they should be using it is as free marketing and free advertising for their products and supporting these individuals instead of cracking down on it. But they've noticed that people have the opportunity to make money at it, and they don't like that.
I think really what's happening is that Axanar did something that I think Axanar actually crossed the line.
Yes, I think so too.
Yeah. And I really don't think this is going to be a warning shot for
they went too far.
Or Star Trek Continues or Phase 2 or even Renegades. I think Axanar crossed a couple of lines that CBS has laid out very cleanly and plainly to all of us. Anybody who uses their IP, even to me, who all I'm doing is just making a fan comic. But it's very clear. They say, you know, you cannot make money from this. I mean, this has been a thing that my wife and I have discussed numerous times. When I go to conventions and I have a table, why don't I have a copy of Tamerlan printed out for people to buy? I cannot sell Star Trek IP. And that has been like a straightforward, I understand that clearly. It's very straightforward. And even whenever I started to say, hey, I'm going to get a Patreon and I'm going to see if people will start funding, you know, Patreon, I had to sit there and talk through to make sure that people are not funding Tamerlan. They're funding me as an artist. And it's very, very important to delineate those two things, that Tamerlan's free and anybody can have it. And if you're going to, you know, and that I think that with Axanar, they really crossed some lines saying, hey, we're a professional group doing a professional thing and I'm drawing a salary and you guys just paid me my salary to make this show. And I think CBS said, now, wait a minute. That's not what we're allowing. We don't want to go there. That's not a. I also think if you look at Axanar, they're using J.J. Abrams' designs. And I think crossed a lot of lines, too.
Well, I thought it was like a. It looked like a. To me, it looked like a hybrid between TOS Trek and J.J. Trek. It was like very similar to J.J. design, but it also had a little bit more. TOS, it was like a hybrid to me. Yeah, like the nacelles weren't quite as giant.
I think they were trying to bridge that JJ Trek Enterprise or Starships designs with the TOS Starship designs. Because the ship that they use for Axanar is very clearly TOS era ship. You know, it's a very TOS style. But the other ships that they've got going through there are they look very much like Abrams property.
Yeah.
Well, I think that really CBS has pretty much given up on Kirk's generation. We can mess around with Kirk's generation all we want because they're not going to go back to the 1960s buttons that go. That's not going to happen anymore because it doesn't even fit our universe now.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got keyboards. Why didn't they have keyboards on TOS Enterprise? You know, on the TOS Enterprise.
That's a good question.
Why not? You know, instead you have to push all these specific buttons that specifically do one thing. I mean, if you want to make a callback, it's like the control panels in TOS are very Darmok-like. They only do one thing.
Yeah,
you can't communicate any other way with your computers.
That's why there's hundreds of buttons.
That's why there's zillions of buttons all over the place, which is great. But I think that that's the thing. I think that they made those two mistakes. They crossed the IP. They crossed Abrams' IP instead of just crossing CBS's IP. And I think that drawing money was, you know, drawing a salary. And you think about John Broughton, who does Starship Farragut. He has dumped, like, I don't even know how much money he's dumped into Farragut. And he doesn't draw a salary. He doesn't do anything. And that's the same with that's the same thing with Kali in Phase 2. Neither one of them are drawing salaries in any way. You know, so it does make you kind of wonder about that. I think that's the big thing is I think they crossed the IP and I think they did the things that we have all sort of known for a long time. We're not supposed to do.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. And I do have a hard time wrapping my brain around if Axanar did everything that we're assuming that happened here. If they've gone that far, like they knew they made that much money, they're on the radar. Why did they push it that far? Was it just complete hubris, or was it just ignorance, or I don't know? But you know, it is hard to believe that they would go and push it as far as they did. If this is the true issue behind it all,
yeah.
So,
I think that Axanar, the group of Axanar, is polarizing the Trekkies a little too by saying, you know, help us fight this big corporate monster when, you know, I'm looking at this going, I don't know. They had every right and they did sort of lay down the rules. I mean, they did tell us that this was a deal.
Right.
You know, we're allowed to play in their sandbox so long as we don't charge for the lemonade, you know, and that's really pretty much where it goes.
Yeah.
Right. They let us in.
Yeah. And though I do totally agree with you,
would have taken advantage of it.
Yeah, And I agree, Aaron. I mean, we are the reason that they have a show at all. If it wasn't for it's Bijot Trimble. That was who I was talking about last podcast. The person who in the middle of second season visited the sets of the original series, got all hooked up in it, and she was part of the drive for the fan
letters and
stuff like that. Yeah. But I mean, it's Bijot Trimble is a great example. Without her, we wouldn't even have Star Trek. It would have died in second season. It would never have made its 80 episodes that it needed for syndication. We would have never seen it again. It would have been like The Lieutenant. Nobody's ever seen The Lieutenant. Why? Because they only made one season.
Yeah.
And you don't get replay value unless you make 80 episodes. And that's the way it goes. So,
I mean, like, you know, I mean, Axanar might even possibly be, and other fan films, possibly be the reason we are getting another actual Star Trek show from CBS, because they've seen the money going to all these fan films. Because, I mean, between Axanar and all the other kickstarted Star Treks, I mean, there's easily $3 to $4 million between all the different, you know, fan films. Farragut continues, Phase Two,
which would pay Axanar for one whole episode in real Hollywood terms.
Yeah, I mean, like, but it's fans putting out this money, and it's just like, oh, well, I mean, maybe it got their attention. Maybe it was their intentions to make a show to coincide with the 50th anniversary all along. But, I mean, given that, you know, over the past, like, 5 years, every single rumor about a show has been shot down, it just seems kind of coincidental that finally another show's around the corner, and it's only after we've had, like, millions of dollars in Kickstarters.
Yeah. I don't disagree. It's their property. I just, you know, I hope that, you know, they do realize that the fans are really what's pumping the life into this whole franchise. It's always has been. You know, since the original series was canceled, you know, after the third series, people just kept going and going, and it brought it back so many times. And I just, that's what makes any band, you know, big, because their fans are there. They have the fans. They're willing to go out, buy the albums, go to see the concerts and stuff like that.
They're putting their butt on the line for this one, because as much as we're complaining about CBS wanting to put this on their pay-per-view for it, the truth of the matter is, episode one of whatever this new series is going to bring each and every one of us in.
Oh, yeah.
And by episode five or six, if they have lost 50% of us, then they're going to have to straighten up and fly right quick to keep us there. So really, the truth is, as much as we're all complaining about the fact that they've weaseled us into paying $5 a month or $7 or $8 or whatever it's going to cost us to get CBS online, the truth is we now really do have the power over them.
Yeah.
Because all they have to do is put out Into Darkness enough that all of us are like, okay, seriously, why am I putting money into you guys for this? Right. I own all of Star Trek on DVD. I really don't need to have it on streaming. It's just convenient. It keeps me from having to use my CD-ROM in my computer. That's it.
Yeah.
I honestly could watch anything by myself here.
Right. And I think that's – but this is great too, because we were talking this before, is that because CBS is going to be – obviously we have to get the
CBS Now.
Yeah, CBS Now, that we have to subscribe to it. We're going to have like probably the closest metrics of fans that we'll ever see of like – yeah, people who are going to come and tune in to, you know, at least the first two or three episodes.
Sure. I mean, yeah, you're going to see every Trekkie out there is going to be there for the first episode.
Right, exactly. So,
I mean, so you'll know exactly how many Trekkies there are.
It'll have been like almost 12 years by the time it comes out that there's been a Star Trek show on television.
So but I've been a Trekkie since 1975. So I'm really there's a lot of us out there. You guys are all Trekkies from different generations.
Yeah. You know. But my point is saying we will get like true metrics. I don't know if we've ever had anything that could measure us and say like, okay, there are a million Trekkies. There's 2 million Trekkies. There's under a million Trekkies. I don't know. I mean, like, what's the number? Like, I think we're going to find out, you know.
If they release their numbers.
I'm sure we'll get some kind of reports on that.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see how it all pans out.
Absolutely.
Somebody will reveal that statistic.
Indeed.
Dave Duncan will.
I'll dig it out.
I'll CBS. Find it. I'll find it.
Tell me. Star Trek and CBS Now at Tanagra.
So this has all been great. Guy, I'm really happy that you could come back and we could talk about another favorite thing that we like. Last time we talked about your comic book, and this time we talked about Darmok.
Yes, indeed.
Sorry about that. I had a friend who was calling over and over and over because he thought, I don't know why he's ignoring me. I don't know why he's ignoring me. I don't know.
I don't like you, that's why.
So I'm like, mute the microphone, call him and say, look, I'll call you in 15 minutes. Just hold on.
Right, right.
Wow. So sorry about that. So what were you saying? I apologize.
Oh, I was just saying that is, you know, great to have you back on because we're, you know, that we get to talk about last time we talked about like how we love your comic, the USS Tamberlin. And now we get to talk about Darmok, which is one of your guys' favorites episodes.
Yes.
And, you know, it's great to have you back and we can.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me on twice.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know how many times, you know, before you'll be like, that's it. We're not calling Guy anymore.
Well, we've already I teased the last time that we already had a guest lined up for when we talk Galaxy Quest. And for those who listened last time, that is Guy, who's going to join us for Galaxy Quest whenever we get around to doing that, hopefully in the first half of the year sometime.
Right.
The greatest Star Trek fan film ever, Galaxy Quest.
Absolutely. once you give out some of your contact information, Guy, just so everyone has it, and we'll post it in the show notes as well.
Sure. You can find me at usstamerlin.com. That's where the comic is running every week on Sundays at midnight. You can also find me at usstamerlin on Twitter. You can find, you know, / usstamerlin on Facebook. So, and we've got the adventures of Julie Cochran and her little lollipop destroyer.
Yeah, and give the Patreon again.
And my Patreon is patreon.com/GSDavisArt, A-R-T. So
awesome,
you can find me there and you can become a patron and then, you know, and join in on all the people who sometimes get to see Tamerlan before it actually airs. Because I sometimes post that to my patrons. If I manage to get it done before Saturday night when I'm still scrambling to put it all together. So, and there have been times I've been a little close these last couple of weeks. I've been like, oh no, it's Saturday night. I was still drawn.
Saturday night. You know,
that's what I spend my Saturdays now doing because I'm 40 and
I don't do anything fun really anymore.
I don't work. Or anything like that. I just sit at home and draw. That's what I do. But thank you guys for having me on board. I really appreciate it. And I enjoy being with you guys. You guys are a lot of fun. And it's great to meet you, Faith, finally. Because, like, you were Tribble Planet last time. So,
yeah,
I understand.
Yeah, it's been great to meet you.
And hopefully it'll all work out so we'll all be together again one day down the line for...
Galaxy Quest!
By Drop
like I said, all our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com and Twitter at warp11. You can find us at syntholics.com. Email us at syntholics@yahoo.com. We want to hear your feedback. We want to hear your ideas. If our show has changed your life in any way, please tell us and we'll read it on the air.
You got me fired, man.
We will read that on the air, and we will commiserate your great loss. But maybe you'll find a better job because of us.
My girlfriend left me.
You didn't need her anyway.
You'll find a better one because of... Wait a minute.
Oh, man.
One that appreciates our sense of humor.
My cat left.
You'll find
a better one.
You can follow us at Synthaholic Duo on Twitter. Me personally, David_J_Duncan on Twitter.
I'm at Blackbird2004. And Faith?
You can find me at Faith Kurtzberg on Twitter.
Find us on iTunes. Rate us. We will read your name and say you gave us 5 stars, if indeed you did give us 5 stars, as a shout-out on the show.
Yeah.
So if that is any... incentive for us to utter your name.
Absolutely. And, yeah, not just rate us. Write us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com.
Oh, yes. We need a written review. Otherwise, there will be no name to utter.
Yes. And but definitely write us an email, suggest topics, ideas, things that you want to talk about or have us talk about.
Definitely take topic submissions.
We definitely like to hear from you.
Or tell us what you'd like to have the guy come back and talk about. And you know, have him torture us with rabbit holes.
I'll talk about grapes and oranges. I'll talk about anything.
Grapes and oranges. That sounds like
for an hour.
Fascinating.
I'll talk about pizza for an hour.
Fermented grape orange wine.
Well, we did have a jaunt there where we were talking about fonts, type, and the alphabet. So, I mean, that was a good 10
and 666. You know, we covered all the topics today.
So, and lastly, let's also bring out that please tell a friend, tell a coworker. Tell that strange captain, Temerian captain, that keeps on talking in allegory and metaphor.
Share your earbud with the guy on the bus.
There you go.
The really creepy guy sitting next to you. You know the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then wash the earbud after you're done.
And lick it. And when he puts his hands on your leg, you know it's time to go.
Also, we have a Patreon, just in case you didn't know. If you'd like to fund us and help us get to cons so you can see us and meet us in person and see how awkward we are, it's patreon.com/synthaholics. Anyway, thank you all for listening. Live long and prosper. And we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
We'll record it, and then we'll listen back to it, and then we'll be like, what the heck were we even talking about?
No, I actually hadn't been recording.
No. I meant like when we do it, we'll like record it, and it'll just be complete nonsense. Yeah.
But it'll be great. It'll be a great episode. It's just like people will be just like, what?
I don't know. I don't know if people likes to hear the rambling.
I'm pretty cool. I'm you know, I can get silly when
Aaron,
I'm drunk, but I'm
ramble
still.
Ramble anyways.
I do.
Still coherent.
Quite a bit.
So
I do.
So Guy, what episode did you listen to that we did an episode review on?
Tapestry.
The ye old tapestry. We have many tapestries, but if you are a Scottish lord, then I am Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, that was. I listened to your tapestry one because I figured that would be the most reasonable one. It was the most recent. The Rye and Jiri at, what is it, Lungha? Rye of Loani under two moons, you know, that whole thing.